coming back home and taking a look at the JSC's performance. As I mentioned at the top of the show, a bit of a U-turn being put on by the All Share today, with it finishing the session in the green, up just over 8%. As you can see there, bulk of the heavy lifting being done by the Resources 10 component today. It trading 3.2% higher. Financial 15 up 0.7%, and the Industrial 25 just short of 0.5% firmer. Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the day's local markets action, Nesan Nayar from Sasfin Securities. Thanks so much, Nesan, for joining us today. So we've had risk on sentiment still in play today in the global arena. The JSC late to the party, but I guess attending by the end of the session nevertheless. What have you made of the trading day that was?
Yeah, it was a bumpy ride, but you know, if you look at the main drivers of today's market performance, we had a big pickup from some of the big rand hedges, as you would expect, you know, with the rand weakening 1.4% on the day. British American Tobacco cleared 500 rand. I mean, I can't remember. It's been a while since it's been over that. So we had Richemont as well, you know, over 100 rand. We had Sasol up over 5% on the news that one of the seven units in its Lake Charles project has already started mainstream production. Mm-hmm. And we had, I think, you know, it was, I think Kuro's results were actually a good result.
Yeah.
You know, I know the market expects it to do much better, but, you know, 23% the earnings growth in the current economic environment,
absolutely,
I think is phenomenal.
Certainly so. Nothing to scoff at. I want to drill down into that current local economic environment, because we've had a few warning lights emerge. Of course, the big one is around Eskom and the fact that we may look at a failed entity, and if it's an entity at all, come April. And then, you know, retail sales data pointing to just how distressed consumers still are.
Yeah, listen, you know, it's funny you use the word warning lights in the same sentence as Eskom, because there's lots of those jokes going on.
No pun intended.
I think with Eskom, the big, and I think one of the reasons the rand is weakening, is that the market might actually be pricing in a debt downgrade from Moody's. With what's happened with Eskom in the, you know, recently, and if you think back, we had manufacturing data early on, was it last week or yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturing environment is taking a lot of strain already. And with the electricity outages right now, we're not going to see a recovery in manufacturing anytime soon. You know, the consumer is under pressure. Look at that retail number, you know, 1% compared to more than 2% expected. And the number for November was 3.1%. So, you know, a big fall in retail sales as well, all of which is going to put pressure on GDP, which then puts pressure on the fiscus, and their ability, you know, to fund expenditure. And on top of all of this, you've got Eskom now coming and asking for at least 100 billion.
Absolutely.
So I think we you know, Moody's has been very kind to us,
yeah,
up to now. But I think the market is beginning to get the sense that is rolling off.
Well, it's already been pretty emphatic about the fact that while it is encouraged by, you know, some of the steps that are being taken at this stage of the game by government, it's still not fully convinced, because there aren't actual concrete measures being outlined in terms of how we're going to be hitting some of the targets we've set further down the road.
Yeah, so, and this is the biggest challenge. I mean, the president, I think, is trying to do his best to calm the nation. The public enterprises minister wants to give us confidence that they at least have a handle over what's going on. But, you know, this is usually the time when I think a lot of investors say, well, let's get out. And, you know, when things actually do show signs of improvement, we'll get back in. And I think the load shedding experience we're having now with Eskom might just be the start, mm-hmm, of a period when we see this level of disruption in the economy.
You highlighted Caro as you know, one of the players that's managed to withstand some of these economic pressures. We had DRD Gold out with numbers today as well, and it illustrated you know, the extent to which it's been hit by power-related issues. It's shaved off 27 million rand off its interim revenue, moving in it into a loss for the period. What's your view on DRD Gold? Is it a player you look at?
Listen, it's a... So what you got to remember is that DRD Gold does a lot of gold treatment. So, you know, surface treatments of gold. They don't own any subterranean mines anymore. Okay. These treatments come in at a very, very low margin. Now, they had a 3% drop in production, which happens from time to time because of grades and, you know, operational issues. They're not helped by the gold price, really. the gold price, they're effectively a price taker. So even though you had the gold price go up and you had the rand-dollar exchange rate weaken over the comparable period, you know, if you look at Pan African that came out as well, they made mention of that. So even though it was helped, the revenue line, because they didn't make the same production level, was flat, but you got a cost push, inflation coming through, and then you're going to lose money.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, this is the challenge with these businesses that make such small margins in the mining industry. They actually need the help of Eskom, and they need the help of policymakers in order to sustain themselves. And when they're left on their own, it becomes very, very difficult.
Well, one company that's managed to turn things around or make itself more defensive on its own has been Emira Property Fund. I mean, looking at its diversification strategy offshore, but then also, how it's exposed to the South African economy right now. Your view on Emira, we've got Jeff Jennett joining us in just a bit.
Yeah, I don't want to steal Jeff's thunder, but just looking at the top line numbers, about 3% distribution growth. Remember, they had negative distribution growth the last time. So a big improvement for them. And if you look at, they had 6% revenue increase from the existing businesses. So they managed to reduce vacancies. They got some escalations that were coming, which is good. But then costs go up 7%. So, you know, that takes away a lot of profitability from the equation. Of course, if you go through the results, a lot of asset management taking place. Assets are being sold. Acquisitions are being made. They're trying their best to defend themselves from a much weaker South African office environment we've had for the last 8 or 9 years now. So it'll be interesting to hear what Jeff has to say. But generally, I thought it was a much improved set of results and, good work done in the last year.
How much of a defensive positioning are you taking in the market right now? What's your stock pick?
I'm going to go for one of the Rand hedges. I'm going to go for British American again. I think right now you want to stay defensive, and it's very difficult to pick South African-only counters right now. I mean, retailers, I'll stay away from. The banks look cheap, but I think they're going to get a little bit harder hit. We'll have to see what the budget comes up with. But for the time being, stay Rand hedged.
Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Nason. Always a pleasure. Nason Nayar from Sasfin Securities. Welcome back. You're watching Taking Stock. Well, Emira Property Fund's turnaround strategy has continued to assist the group deliver solid results. That's as distributions for the first half increased by 3.1% year on year, despite challenging local conditions. We're now joined in studio by CEO Jeff Jennett to discuss where things are at. Thanks so much, Jeff, for joining us this evening. So reporting this 3.1% year on year increase in distributions for the half year, improving your distribution growth, delivering on your market guidance, the rebalancing of your portfolio, I guess, really playing in your favor right now.
Yes, we've been spending a lot of time getting this right, and I think we've been speaking about it for over 2 years. So you've seen the big play that we've done now through the sale of the office portfolio for 1.8 billion rand. Mm-hmm. That will mean that our office exposure as a percentage of total assets is just less than 25% of our portfolio. So very much more defensive on that side. And then there's the two strategic plays, one in terms of the offshore side, investing into the United States, and the second on the residential side. So we've just taken a 34.9% stake in Transcend Residential Property Fund. So those are the two growth areas that we see.
Okay, so we'll be drilling into the detail of that in just a bit. Before we do, while you highlight, you know, the defensiveness of your income streams as things stand right now, to what extent are you feeling some of the economic pressure and being dealt some of that blow?
There is a lot of pressure, particularly on the cost side. So I look at our electricity charges that we've got. I look at our rates and taxes that we're paying, all that extra. Our cost base is increasing by between 7 and 9% per annum, whereas your income is only growing at 6%. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a squeeze there. And then also in a slowing economy, it's much harder for tenants in order to, for them to pay these increases. So you've got to be very careful. But on the other hand, we have improved on our vacancy side. So you can see that we're staying close to our tenants. You can see that we're keeping our buildings in the best condition possible so that it's as pleasant as possible experience for our tenants. So I think it's all of those factors combined.
Are you opting to defend, you know, that space or that category in terms of, vacancies more aggressively as opposed to pushing through higher margins down the road?
Definitely. That's why our tenant retention rate is sitting at a very high
88%.
It's a fantastic number. Our team have really done a good job. And you can see that. That's much, our preferred route is to retain the tenants, to keep them there rather than letting them go and having to then entice them back. In a slowing economy where tenants aren't taking more and more space, you've got to look after what you've got. So that's certainly the strategy.
Okay, this within a very distressed South African economic environment. I want to shift focus to your international strategy right now, because it's been progressing. You've been recycling your underperforming capital into yield accretive investments in the US. Talk us through the opportunity you've identified on that and the extent to which you are delving in.
So we identified the particular gap in the United States market together with our American partners, Rainier, where we focus on open-air, grocery-anchored, value type of shopping centers. And so this time last year, we had just the one acquisition. Now we've got six. So you can sort of see that momentum taking place. It is certainly yield accretive. The assets that we are acquiring have weighted average lease expiries of close to 6 years. So there's great certainty in terms of that income coming through. And as well as the offering is a value offering, so that to the extent that the U.S. is certainly powering ahead, but to the extent that there is a slowdown in those mid-American states that we're investing into, this is certainly, again, more on the defensive side. So we're very confident on that, but we're entering into it carefully and slowly, and we're doing it on a deal-by-deal basis, asset by asset, and that's why at the moment we've only got 5% of our total assets invested into the United States.
Okay, so it represents 5% of your total assets. What are you looking to take that to, and how quickly?
So what we would like to try and reach is a 7.5% of total assets by June 19. That's adding on another $20 million of investments, and then a further $40 million up to June 2020, which will take it up to 11% of total assets invested into the United States. So that's our target, and we're hoping to meet that.
Bulk of the companies we've had in studio so far highlighting Eskom as their biggest risk. What do you foresee your biggest risk being moving forward?
I think for us, the biggest risk is a slowing economy. Yes, there are some challenges in terms of Eskom. There are some challenges in terms of a constrained consumer. But in my mind, a slowing economy doesn't help anybody. We need to create jobs. We need our tenants to be growing their businesses. And it's very difficult to do that in a slowing economy. So anything that we can do to increase GDP growth will ultimately drive everything.
Absolutely. Well, let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Jeff, for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, at the CEO of Emira Property Fund, Jeff Jennett. And that's some of what's been playing out in the local arena. In the meantime, we've had European banks reveal some insight on their plans going forward as they prepare for the possibility of a hard Brexit deal. We get more detail on that straight after the break. So stay with us. Well, as a no-deal Brexit seems more likely, EU leaders are starting to reveal details of their contingency plans. Let's cross to Bronwyn now for more insight on this. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, Brexit is amongst the issues that continue to weigh on investors' minds. We've had Prime Minister Theresa May tell MPs to hold their nerve over Brexit and give her more time to negotiate a deal that's acceptable to both the European Union and the British Parliament. Some critics say this is just a delay tactic on May's part to scare Parliament into backing her deal. There's a debate scheduled for Parliament to debate Brexit tomorrow, but we do have just 45 days until Britain is set to leave the bloc. So let's cross now to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Ulrich Bartz is standing by. Ulrich, thanks so much for your time today. So the clock is ticking ever faster to the deadline for Brexit. From a company-specific point of view, particularly the banks, where do they sit in terms of contingency planning for any of the eventualities we could see play out here?
They seem to be on schedule. That's what Sabine Lautenschläger indicates of the European Central Bank. She's on the executive board there, the member responsible for banking supervision. And she says that banks in London have made reasonable progress in moving their business elsewhere in preparation for a Brexit. They need an operating arm or a leg in the EU of the 27 after a Brexit in order to continue to do business by having a banking license with an operation in place. Just to give you an idea, Luxembourg, the head of the agency that sponsors the finance industry there, that's responsible for marketing, for example, he says that about 50 financial service institutions have settled in Luxembourg, have established a presence there with a view to Brexit, to new ones, not just banks, but also insurance companies, for example. And here in Frankfurt, the head of the supervisory authority for Germany, the financial supervisory authority, has said that about 45 banks have expanded a presence or have moved a presence here to Frankfurt.
Switching focus now, Huawei has said that jealousy could be behind some of the criticism it's had to shoulder recently. We've had several countries express concerns about Huawei's involvement at the center of 5G telecommunication infrastructure because claims suggest that the firm could be compelled to assist in Chinese state intelligence work. Huawei, of course, has denied this, but it does put the focus on security. And Ulrich, in Germany, there have been developments on this front, so tell us more.
Yes, the Interior Minister, who is responsible for issues like this, national security and IT, for example, telecommunications security, Horst Seehofer, he has said that he could imagine that companies like Huawei that want to provide telecommunications equipment and they're from a foreign country, not just Huawei, but others as well, should sign some sort of security agreement and agree to not spy on Germany. It would be kind of a no-spy declaration that they would have to sign. This in order to allow, maybe to assuage the critics that say that there's an imminent danger of letting people like the Chinese telecommunications giant come in here. But of course, having an agreement signed, that's not necessarily going to prevent from spying. If a company wants to spy, they'll do it with or without that. But for Germany, clearly, it would have advantages to have someone like Huawei here with very good technology in the field. They're said to be head most of the rest. It would be important for the competitiveness of the country here to have a player like that, among others, in the market.
And it's earnings season and ABN AMRO out with numbers. The Dutch bank has disappointed with a 42% fall in fourth quarter net profit. And as a result, we're seeing those shares take a bit of a knock today, Ulrich.
It surely is. The investors are shocked. The share down by 6 to 7% in European trading today. The investors not expecting that. The company's CFO trying to calm the investors and saying operationally we're solid and we're steady. But he's pointing to, among others, a cost for laundering, battling money laundering, and loan impairments, apparently a problem at the moment, at least, at ABN AMRO.
Ulrich, thanks so much for your time today. We have to leave it there. Ulrich Bartz is from Deutsche Welle. And that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn. And that's where I leave things with you for now. Up next, it's ETF Investor. So keep watching and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock. What's your stock pick?
I'm going to go for one of the Rand hedges. I'm going to go for British American again. I think right now you want to stay defensive, and it's very difficult to pick South African-only counters right now. I mean, retailers, I'll stay away from. The banks look cheap, but I think they're going to get a little bit harder hit. We'll have to see what the budget comes up with. But for the time being, stay Rand hedged.
Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Nesan. Always a pleasure. Nesan Nayar from Sasfin Securities.